By the fifth day, I was so tired of bologna, I nearly got sick every time I looked at it. We had eaten all our candy bars in the first 2 days. I was dying for a Pepsi. I'm what you might call a Pepsi addict. I drink them like a fiend, and going for 5 days without one was about to kill me. Johnny promised to get some if we ran out of supplies and had to get some more, but that didn't help me right then. I was smoking a lot more there than I usually do, I guess because it was something to do, although Johnny warned me that I would get sick smoking so much. We were careful with our cigarettes. If that old church ever caught fire, there'd be no stopping it. On the fifth day, I had read up to Sherman's Siege of Atlanta in Gone with the Wind, owed Johnny $150 from poker games, smoked 2 packs of Camels, and, as Johnny had predicted, got sick. I hadn't eaten anything all day, and smoking on an empty stomach doesn't make you feel great. I curled up in a corner to sleep off the smoke. I was just about asleep when I heard, as if from a great distance, a low, long whistle that went off in a sudden high note. I was too sleepy to pay any attention, although Johnny didn't have any reason to be whistling like that. He was sitting on the back steps trying to read Gone with the Wind. I had almost decided that I had dreamed the outside world and there was nothing real but bologna sandwiches and the Civil War and the old church and the mist in the valley. It seemed to me that I had always lived in the church, or maybe lived during the Civil War, and had somehow got transplanted. That shows you what a wild imagination I have. A toe nudged me in the ribs. "Glory," said a rough but familiar voice. "He looks different with his hair like that." I rolled over and sat up, rubbing the sleep out of my eyes and yawning. Suddenly I blinked. "Hey, Dally."
"Hey, pony boy," he grinned down at me. "Or should I say Sleeping Beauty?"
I never thought I'd live to see the day when I would be so glad to see Dally Winston. But right then he meant one thing, contact with the outside world. And it suddenly became real and vital. "How's Soda Pop? Are the Fuzz after us? Is Dary all right? Do the boys know where we are? What?"
"Hold on, kid," Dally broke in. "I can't answer everything at once. You two want to go get something to eat first? I skipped breakfast and I'm about starved."
"You're starved?" Johnny was so indignant he nearly squeaked. I remembered the bologna. "Is it safe to go out?" I asked eagerly.
"Yep."
Dally searched his shirt pocket for a cigarette, and finding none said,
"Got a cancer stick, Johnny Cake?"
Johnny tossed him a whole package.
"The Fuzz won't be looking for you around here," Dally said, lighting up. "They think you've lit out for Texas. I've got Buck's T-Bird parked down the road a little ways." "Gosh almighty, boys, ain't you been eating anything?"
Johnny looked startled. "Yeah, whatever gave you the idea we ain't?"
Dally shook his head. "You're both pale and you've lost weight. After this, get out in the sun more. You look like you've been through the mill."
I started to say, "Look who's talking," but decided it would be safer not to. Dally needed a shave. A stubble of colorless beard covered his jaw, and he looked like he was the one who'd been sleeping in his clothes for a week instead of us. I knew he hadn't seen a barber in months, but it was safer not to get mouthy with Dally Winston.
"Hey, pony boy," he fumbled with a piece of paper in his back pocket. "I got a letter for you."
"A letter? Who from?"
"The president, of course, stupid." "It's from Soda."
"Soda Pop?" I said, bewildered. "But how did he know?"
"He came over to Buck's a couple of days ago for something and found that sweatshirt. I told him I didn't know where you were, but he didn't believe me. He gave me this letter and half his paycheck to give you. Kid, you ought to see Dary. He's taking this mighty hard."
I wasn't listening. I leaned back against the side of the church and read.
"Pony boy, well, I guess you got into some trouble, huh? Dary and me nearly went nuts when you ran out like that. Dary is awful sorry he hit you. You know he didn't mean it. And then you and Johnny turned up missing, and what with that dead kid in the park and Dally getting hauled into the station, well, it scared us something awful.
The police came by to question us, and we told them as much as we could. I can't believe little old Johnny could kill somebody. I know Dally knows where you are, but you know him. He keeps his trap shut and won't tell me nothing. Darry hasn't got the slightest notion where you're at, and it is nearly killing him. I wish you'd come back and turn yourselves in, but I guess you can't since Johnny might get hurt. You sure are famous. You got a paragraph in the newspaper, even. Take care and say hi to Johnny for us. Soda Pop Curtis. He could improve his spelling, I thought, after reading it through 3 or 4 times. How come you got hauled in? I asked Dally.
Shoot, kid, he grinned wolfishly. Them boys at the station know me by now. I get hauled in for everything that happens on our turf. While I was there, I kind of let it slip that y'all were heading for Texas. So that's where they're looking.
He took a drag on his cigarette and cussed it good-naturedly for not being a cool. Johnny listened in admiration. You sure can cuss good, Dally.
Sure can, Dally agreed wholeheartedly, proud of his vocabulary. But don't you kids get to picking on my bad habits.
He gave me a hard rub on the head.
Kid, I swear, it don't look like you with your hair all cut off. It used to look tough. You and Soda had the coolest looking hair in town.
I know, I said sourly. I look lousy, but don't rub it in.
Well, do y'all want something to eat or not?
Johnny and I leaped up.
You'd better believe it.
Gee, Johnny said wistfully, it sure will be good to get into a car again.
Well, Dally drawled, I'll give you a ride for your money.
Dally always did like to drive fast, as if he didn't care whether he got where he was going or not. And we came down the red dirt road off Jay Mountain doing 85. I like fast driving, and Johnny was crazy about drag races, but we both got a little green around the gills when Dally took a corner on two wheels with the brakes screaming. Maybe it was because we hadn't been in a car for so long. We stopped at a Dairy Queen, and the first thing I got was a Pepsi. Johnny and I gorged on barbecue sandwiches and banana splits.
Glory!
Dallas said, amazed, watching us gulp the stuff down. You don't need to make like every mouthful's your last. I got plenty of money.
Take it easy. I don't want you getting sick on me. And I thought I was hungry.
Johnny merely ate faster. I didn't slow down until I got a headache.
I didn't tell y'all something, Dally said, finishing his third hamburger. The Socs and us are having all-out warfare all over the city. That kid you killed had plenty of friends, and all over town it's Soch against Greece. We can't walk alone at all. I started carrying a heater.
Dally, I said, frightened. You kill people with heaters.
You kill 'em with switchblades, too, don't you, kid?
Dally said in a hard voice. Johnny gulped.
Don't worry, Dally went on. It ain't loaded. I ain't aiming to get picked up for murder. But it sure does help a bluff.
Tim Shepard's gang and our outfit are having it out with the Socs tomorrow night at the vacant lot. We got hold of the president of one of their social clubs and had a war council.
Yeah,
Dally sighed, and I knew he was remembering New York.
Just like the good old days. If they win, things go on as usual. If we do, they stay out of our territory, but good. Two-Bit got jumped a few days ago. Darry and me came along in time, but he wasn't having too much trouble. Two-Bit's a good fighter. Hey, I didn't tell you, we got us a spy.
A spy? Johnny looked up from his banana split. Who?
That good-looking broad I tried to pick up that night you killed the Soch. The redhead. Cherry, what's her name?
Chapter 6 Johnny gagged, and I almost dropped my hot fudge sundae.
Cherry? We both said at the same time.
The Soch?
Yeah, Dally said. She came over to the vacant lot the night Two-Bit was jumped. Shepard and some of his outfit and us were hanging around there when she drives up in her little old Stingray. That took a lot of nerve. Some of us was for jumping her then and there, her being the dead kid's girl and all. But Two-Bit stopped us. Man, next time I want a broad, I'll pick up my own kind.
Yeah, Johnny said slowly, and I wondered if, like me, he was remembering another voice, also tough and just deepened into manhood, saying, "Next time you want a broad, pick up your own kind." It gave me the creeps. Dally was going on. "She said she felt that the whole mess was her fault, which it is, and that she'd keep up with what was coming off with the socias in the rumble, and would testify that the socias were drunk and looking for a fight, and that you fought back in self-defense." He gave a grim laugh. "That little gal sure does hate me. I offered to take her over to the dingo for a coke, and she said, 'No, thank you,' and told me where I could go in very polite terms." She was afraid of loving you, I thought. So Cherry Valance, the cheerleader, Bob's girl, the soche, was trying to help us. No, it wasn't Cherry the soche who was helping us. It was Cherry the dreamer who watched sunsets and couldn't stand fights. It was hard to believe a soche would help us, even a soche that dug sunsets. Dally didn't notice. He had forgotten about it already. "Man, this place is out of it. What do they do for kicks around here, play checkers?" Dally surveyed the scene without interest. "I ain't never been in the country before. Have you two?" Johnny shook his head, but I said, "Dad used to take us all hunting. I've been in the country before." "How do you know about the church?"
"I got a cousin that lives around here somewheres. Tipped me off that it'd make a tough hideout in case of something. Hey, Pony Boy, I heard you was the best shot in the family."
"Yeah," I said. "Darry always got the most ducks, though, him and Dad. Soda and I goofed around too much, scared most of our game away." I couldn't tell Dally that I hated to shoot things. He'd think I was soft.
"That was a good idea. I mean, cutting your hair and bleaching it. They printed your descriptions in the paper, but you sure wouldn't fit them now."
Johnny had been quietly finishing his fifth barbecue sandwich, but now he announced, "We're going back and turn ourselves in." It was Dally's turn to gag. Then he swore a while. Then he turned to Johnny and demanded,
"What?"
"I said we're going back and turn ourselves in," Johnny repeated in a quiet voice. I was surprised, but not shocked. I had thought about turning ourselves in lots of times, but apparently the whole idea was a jolt to Dallas. "I got a good chance of being let off easy," Johnny said desperately. And I didn't know if it was Dally he was trying to convince or himself. "I ain't got no record with a fuzz, and it was self-defense. Pony Boy and Cherry can testify to that, and I don't aim to stay in that church all my life." That was quite a speech for Johnny. His big black eyes grew bigger than ever at the thought of going to the police station. For Johnny had a deathly fear of cops. But he went on. "We won't tell that you helped us, Dally. And we'll give you back the gun and what's left of the money and say we hitchhiked back so you won't get into trouble, okay?" Dally was chewing the corner of his ID card, which gave his age as 21 so he could buy liquor.
"You sure you want to go back? Us greasers get it worse than anyone else."
Johnny nodded. "I'm sure. It ain't fair for Pony Boy to have to stay up in that church with Darry and Soda worrying about him all the time. I don't guess," he swallowed and tried not to look eager, "I don't guess my parents are worried about me or anything."
"The boys are worried," Dally said in a matter-of-fact voice. "Two-Bit was for going to Texas to hunt for you."
"My parents," Johnny repeated doggedly. "Did they ask about me?"
"No," snapped Dally. "They didn't. Blast it, Johnny, what do they matter? Shoot, my old man don't give a hang whether I'm in jail or dead in a car wreck or drunk in the gutter. That don't bother me none."
Johnny didn't say anything, but he stared at the dashboard with such hurt bewilderment that I could have bawled. Dally cussed under his breath and nearly tore out the transmission of the T-Bird as we roared out of the Dairy Queen. I felt sorry for Dally. He meant it when he said he didn't care about his parents. But he and the rest of the gang knew Johnny cared and did everything they could to make it up to him. I don't know what it was about Johnny Maybe that lost puppy look and those big scared eyes were what made everyone his big brother. But they couldn't, no matter how hard they tried, take the place of his parents. I thought about it for a minute. Darry and Soda Pop were my brothers, and I loved both of them, even if Darry did scare me. But not even Soda could take Mom and Dad's place. And they were my real brothers, not just sort of adopted ones. No wonder Johnny was hurt because his parents didn't want him. Dally could take it. Dally was of the breed that could take anything because he was hard and tough. And when he wasn't, he could turn hard and tough. Johnny was a good fighter and could play it cool, but he was sensitive. And that isn't a good way to be when you're a greaser. "Blast it, Johnny!" Dally growled as we flew along the red road. "Why didn't you think of turning yourself in 5 days ago? It would have saved a lot of trouble." "I was scared," Johnny said with conviction. "I still am." He ran his finger down one of his short black sideburns. "I guess we ruined our hair for nothing, Pony Boy." "I guess so." I was glad we were going back. I was sick of that church. I didn't care if I was bald. Dally was scowling, and from long and painful experience, I knew better than to talk to him when his eyes were blazing like that. I'd likely as not get clobbered over the head. That had happened before, just as it had happened to all the gang at one time or another. We rarely fought among ourselves. Darry was the unofficial leader since he kept his head best. Soda and Steve had been best friends since grade school and never fought. And Two-Bit was just too lazy to argue with anyone. Johnny kept his mouth shut too much to get into arguments, and nobody ever fought with Johnny. I kept my mouth shut, too. But Dally was a different matter. If something beefed him, he didn't keep quiet about it, and if you rubbed him the wrong way, look out. Not even Darry wanted to tangle with him. He was dangerous. Johnny just sat there and stared at his feet. He hated for any one of us to be mad at him. He looked awful sad. Dally glanced at him out of the corner of his eye. I looked out the window. "Johnny," Dally said in a pleading high voice, using a tone I'd never heard from him before. "Johnny, I ain't mad at you. I just don't want you to get hurt. You don't know what a few months in jail can do to you. Oh, blast it, Johnny." He pushed his white blonde hair back out of his eyes. "You get hardened in jail. I don't want that to happen to you, like it happened to me." I kept staring out the window at the rapidly passing scenery, but I felt my eyes getting round. Dally never talked like that. Never. Dally didn't give a Yankee dime about anyone but himself, and he was cold and hard and mean. He never talked about his past or being in jail that way. If he talked about it at all, it was to brag. And I suddenly thought of Dally in jail at the age of 10. Dally growing up in the streets. "Would you rather have me living in hideouts for the rest of my life, always on the run?" Johnny asked seriously. If Dally had said yes, Johnny would have gone back to the church without hesitation. He figured Dally knew more than he did, and Dally's word was law. But he never heard Dally's answer, for we had reached the top of Jay Mountain, and Dally suddenly slammed on the brakes and stared. "Oh, glory," he whispered. "The church was on fire." "Let's go see what the deal is," I said, hopping out. "What for?" Dally sounded irritated. "Get back in here before I beat your head in." I knew Dally would have to park the car and catch me before he could carry out his threat, and Johnny was already out and following me, so I figured I was safe. We could hear him cussing us out, but he wasn't mad enough to come after us. There was a crowd at the front of the church, mostly little kids, and I wondered how they'd gotten there so quickly. I tapped the nearest grown-up. "What's going on?" "Well, we don't know for sure," the man said with a good-natured grin. "We were having a school picnic up here, and the first thing we knew, the place is burning up. Thank goodness this is a wet season, and the old thing is worthless anyway." Then, to the kids, he shouted, "Stand back, children. The firemen will be coming soon." "I bet we started it," I said to Johnny. "We must have dropped a lighted cigarette or something." About that time, a lady came running up.
Jerry, some of the kids are missing.
They're probably around here somewhere. You can't tell with all this excitement where they might be.
No, she shook her head. They've been missing for at least a half an hour. I thought they were climbing the hill.
Then we all froze. Faintly, just faintly, you could hear someone yelling, and it sounded like it was coming from inside the church. The woman went white.
I told them not to play in the church. I told them.
She looked like she was going to start screaming, so Jerry shook her.
I'll get them. Don't worry.
I started at a dead run for the church, and the man caught my arm.
I'll get them. You kids stay out.
I jerked loose and ran on. All I could think was, we started it. We started it. We started it. I wasn't about to go through that flaming door, so I slammed a big rock through a window and pulled myself in. It was a wonder I didn't cut myself to death now that I think about it. Hey, Pony Boy. I looked around, startled. I hadn't realized Johnny had been right behind me all the way. I took a deep breath and started coughing. The smoke filled my eyes and they started watering.
Is that guy coming?
Johnny shook his head.
The wind has stopped him. Too scared?
No. Johnny gave me a grin.
Too fat.
I couldn't laugh because I was scared I'd drown in the smoke. The roar and crackling was getting louder, and Johnny shouted the next question.
Where's the kids?
In the back, I guess,
I hollered, and we started stumbling through the church. I should be scared, I thought, with an odd, detached feeling. But I'm not. The cinders and embers began falling on us, stinging and smarting like ants. Suddenly, in the red glow and the haze, I remembered wondering what it was like in a burning ember, and I thought, now I know. It's a red hell. Why aren't I scared? We pushed open the door to the back room and found four or five little kids, about 8 years old or younger, huddled in a corner. One was screaming his head off, and Johnny yelled,
shut up! We're going to get you out!
The kid looked surprised and quit hollering. I blinked myself. Johnny wasn't behaving at all like his old self. He looked over his shoulder and saw that the door was blocked by flames, then pushed open the window and tossed out the nearest kid. I caught one quick look at his face. It was red-marked from falling embers and sweat-streaked, but he grinned at me. He wasn't scared either. That was the only time I can think of when I saw him without that defeated, suspicious look in his eyes. He looked like he was having the time of his life. I picked up a kid, and he promptly bit me, but I leaned out the window and dropped him as gently as I could, being in a hurry like that. A crowd was there by that time. Dally was standing there, and when he saw me, he screamed,
for Pete's sake, get out of there! That roof's gonna cave in any minute! Forget those blasted kids!
I didn't pay any attention, although pieces of the old roof were crashing down too close for comfort. I snatched up another kid, hoping he didn't bite, and dropped him without waiting to see if he landed okay or not. I was coughing so hard I could hardly stand up, and I wished I had time to take off Dally's jacket. It was hot. We dropped the last of the kids out as the front of the church started to crumble. Johnny shoved me toward the window.
Get out!
I leaped out the window and heard timber crashing and the flames roaring right behind me. I staggered, almost falling, coughing and sobbing for breath. Then I heard Johnny scream, and as I turned to go back for him, Dally swore at me and clubbed me across the back as hard as he could, and I went down into a peaceful darkness. When I came to, I was being bounced around, and I ached and smarted, and I wondered dimly where I was. I tried to think, but there was a high-pitched screaming going on, and I couldn't tell whether it was inside my head or out. Then I realized it was a siren. The fuzz, I thought dully. The cops have come for us. I tried to swallow a groan and wished wildly for soda. Someone with a wet, cold rag was gently sponging off my face, and a voice said, I think he's coming around. I opened my eyes. It was dark. I'm moving, I thought. Are they taking me to jail?
Where?
I said hoarsely, not able to get anything else out of my mouth. My throat was sore. I blinked at the stranger sitting beside me. But he wasn't a stranger. I'd seen him before. Take it easy, kid. You're in an ambulance.
Where's Johnny? I cried, frightened at being in this car with strangers. And Dallas?
They're in the other ambulance right behind us. Just calm down. You're going to be okay. You just passed out.
I didn't either, I said in the bored, tough voice we reserved for strangers and cops.
Dallas hit me.
How come?
Because your back was in flames, that's why.
I was surprised.
It was?
Golly, I didn't feel it. It don't hurt.
We put it out before you got burned. That jacket saved you from a bad burn and maybe saved your life. You just keeled over from smoke inhalation and a little shock. Of course, that slap on the back didn't help much.
I remembered who he was then. Jerry somebody or other who was too heavy to get in the window. He must be a school teacher, I thought.
Are you taking us to the police station?
I was still a little mixed up as to what was coming off.
The police station?
It was his turn to be surprised.
What would we want to take you to the police station for? We're taking all three of you to the hospital.
I let his first remark slide by.
Are Johnny and Dally all right?
Which one's which?
Johnny has black hair. Dally's the mean-looking one.
He studied his wedding ring.
Maybe he's thinking about his wife, I thought.
I wished he'd say something.
We think the toe-headed kid is going to be all right. He burned one arm pretty badly, though, trying to drag the other kid out the window.
Johnny, well, I don't know about him. A piece of timber caught him across the back. He might have a broken back, and he was burned pretty severely. He passed out before he got to the window. They're giving him plasma now.
He must have seen the look on my face, because he hurriedly changed the subject.
I swear, you three are the bravest kids I've seen in a long time. First you and the black-haired kid climbing in that window, and then the tough-looking kid going back in to save him. Mrs. O'Brien and I think you were sent straight from heaven, or are you just professional heroes or something?
Sent from heaven? Had he gotten a good look at Dallas?
No, we're greasers, I said. I was too worried and scared to appreciate the fact that he was trying to be funny.
You're what?
Greasers, you know, like hoods, J.D.'s. Johnny is wanted for murder, and Dallas has a record with the fuzz a mile long.
Are you kidding me?
Jerry stared at me as if he thought I was still in shock or something.
I am not. Take me to town and you'll find out pretty quick.
We're taking you to a hospital there anyway. The address card in your billfold said that was where you lived.
Your name's really Ponyboy?
Yeah,
even on my birth certificate. And don't bug me about it.
I felt weak.
Are the little kids okay?
Just fine. A little frightened, maybe. There were some short explosions right after y'all got out. Sounded just exactly like gunfire.
Gunfire. There went our gun, and gone with the wind.
Were we sent from heaven?
I started to laugh weakly.
I guess that guy knew how close to hysterics I really was, for he talked to me in a low, soothing voice all the way to the hospital.
I was sitting in the waiting room, waiting to hear how Dally and Johnny were. I had been checked over, and except for a few burns and a big bruise across my back, I was all right. I had watched them bring Dally and Johnny in on stretchers. Dally's eyes were closed, but when I spoke, he had tried to grin and had told me that if I ever did a stupid thing like that again, he'd beat the tar out of me. He was still swearing at me when they took him on in. Johnny was unconscious. I had been afraid to look at him, but I was relieved to see that his face wasn't burned. He just looked very pale and still and sort of sick. I would have cried at the sight of him so still, except I couldn't in front of people. Jerry Wood had stayed with me all the time. He kept thanking me for getting the kids out. He didn't seem to mind our being hoods. I told him the whole story, starting when Dallas and Johnny and I had met at the corner of Pickett and Sutton. I left out the part about the gun and our hitching a ride in the freight car.
He was real nice about it and said that being heroes would help get us out of trouble, especially since it was self-defense and all. I was sitting there smoking a cigarette when Jerry came back in from making a phone call. He stared at me for a second. "You shouldn't be smoking." I was startled. "How come?" I looked at my cigarette. It looked okay to me. I looked around for a no-smoking sign and couldn't find one. "How come?"
Why, Jerry stammered. You're too young.
I am? I had never thought about it. Everyone in our neighborhood, even the girls, smoked. Except for Darry, who was too proud of his athletic health to risk a cigarette, we had all started smoking at an early age. Johnny had been smoking since he was 9. Steve started at 11, so no one thought it was unusual when I started. I was the weed fiend in my family. Soda smokes only to steady his nerves or when he wants to look tough. Jerry simply sighed, then grinned. "There are some people here to see you. Claim to be your brothers or something?" I leaped up and ran for the door, but it was already open, and Soda had me in a bear hug and was swinging me around. I was so glad to see him I could have bawled. Finally, he set me down and looked at me. He pushed my hair back. "Oh, Pony Boy, your hair. Your tough, tough hair." Then I saw Darry. He was leaning in the doorway, wearing his olive jeans and black T-shirt. He was still tall, broad-shouldered Darry, but his fists were jammed in his pockets and his eyes were pleading. I simply looked at him. He swallowed and said in a husky voice, "Pony Boy." I let go of Soda and stood there for a minute. Darry didn't like me. He had driven me away that night. He had hit me. Darry hollered at me all the time. He didn't give a hang about me. Suddenly I realized, horrified, that Darry was crying. He didn't make a sound, but tears were running down his cheeks. I hadn't seen him cry in years, not even when Mom and Dad had been killed. I remembered the funeral. I had sobbed in spite of myself. Soda had broken down and bawled like a baby. But Darry had only stood there, his fists in his pockets, and that look on his face. The same helpless, pleading look that he was wearing now. In that second, what Soda and Dally and Two-Bit had been trying to tell me came through. Darry did care about me, maybe as much as he cared about Soda. And because he cared, he was trying too hard to make something of me. When he yelled, "Pony, where have you been all this time?" he meant, "Pony, you scared me to death. Please be careful because I couldn't stand it if anything happened to you." Darry looked down and turned away silently. Suddenly I broke out of my daze. "Darry," I screamed, and the next thing I knew, I had him around the waist and was squeezing the daylights out of him. "Darry," I said, "I'm sorry." He was stroking my hair, and I could hear the sobs racking him as he fought to keep back the tears. "Oh, Pony, I thought we'd lost you, like we did Mom and Dad." That was his silent fear, then, of losing another person he loved. I remembered how close he and Dad had been, and I wondered how I could ever have thought him hard and unfeeling. I listened to his heart pounding through his T-shirt and knew everything was going to be okay now. I had taken the long way around, but I was finally home. To stay.
Chapter 7. Now there were three of us sitting in the waiting room, waiting to hear how Dally and Johnny were. Then the reporters and the police came. They asked too many questions too fast and got me mixed up. If you want to know the truth, I wasn't feeling real good in the first place. Kind of sick, really. And I'm scared of policemen anyway. The reporters fired one question right after another at me and got me so confused I didn't know what was coming off. Darry finally told them I wasn't in any shape to be yelled at so much, and they slowed down a little. Darry's kind of big. Soda Pop kept them in stitches. He'd grab one guy's press hat and another's camera and walk around interviewing the nurses and mimicking TV reporters.
He tried to lift the policeman's gun and grinned so crazily when he was caught that the policeman had to grin too. Soda can make anyone grin. I managed to get hold of some hair grease and comb my hair back so that it looked a little better before they got any pictures. I'd die if I got my picture in the paper with my hair looking so lousy. Dairy and Soda Pop were in the pictures, too. Jerry Wood told me that if Soda Pop and Dairy hadn't been so good-looking, they wouldn't have taken so many. That was public appeal, he said. Soda was really getting a kick out of all this. I guess he would have enjoyed it more if it hadn't been so serious, but he couldn't resist anything that caused that much excitement. I swear, sometimes he reminds me of a colt, a long-legged Palomina colt that has to get his nose into everything. The reporter stared at him admiringly. I told you, he looks like a movie star, and he kind of radiates. Finally, even Soda Pop got tired of the reporters. He gets bored with the same old thing after a time. And stretching out on the long bench, he put his head in Dairy's lap and went to sleep. I guess both of them were tired. It was late at night, and I knew they hadn't had much sleep during the week. Even while I was answering questions, I remembered that it had been only a few hours since I was sleeping off a smoke in the corner of the church. Already it was an unreal dream, and yet at the time, I couldn't have imagined any other world. Finally, the reporters started to leave, along with the police. One of them turned and asked, "What would you do right now if you could do anything you wanted?" I looked at him tiredly. "Take a bath." They thought that was pretty funny, but I meant it. I felt lousy. The hospital got real quiet after they left. The only noise was the nurse's soft footsteps and Soda's light breathing. Dairy looked down at him and grinned half-heartedly. "He didn't get much sleep this week," he said softly. "He hardly slept at all." "Mmm," Soda said drowsily. "You didn't either." The nurses wouldn't tell us anything about Johnny and Dally, so Dairy got hold of the doctor. The doctor told us that he would talk only to the family, but Dairy finally got it through the guy's head that we were about as much family as Dally and Johnny had. Dally would be okay after 2 or 3 days in the hospital, he said. One arm was badly burned and would be scarred for the rest of his life, but he would have full use of it in a couple of weeks. "Dally'll be okay," I thought. "Dallas is always okay. He could take anything." It was Johnny I worried about. He was in critical condition. His back had been broken when that piece of timber fell on him. He was in severe shock and suffering from third-degree burns. They were doing everything they could to ease the pain, although since his back was broken, he couldn't even feel the burns below his waist. He kept calling for Dallas and Pony Boy. If he lived... if... please, no, I thought. Please, not if. The blood was draining from my face, and Dairy put an arm across my shoulder and squeezed hard. Even if he lived, he'd be crippled for the rest of his life. "You wanted it straight, and you got it straight," the doctor said. "Now go home and get some rest." I was trembling. A pain was growing in my throat, and I wanted to cry. But greasers don't cry in front of strangers. Some of us never cry at all, like Dally and Two-Bit and Tim Shepard. They forgot how to at an early age. Johnny? Crippled for life? I'm dreaming, I thought in panic. I'm dreaming. I'll wake up at home or in the church, and everything will be like it used to be. But I didn't believe myself. Even if Johnny did live, he'd be crippled and never play football or help us out in a rumble again. He'd have to stay in that house he hated, where he wasn't wanted, and things could never be like they used to be. I didn't trust myself to speak. If I said one word, the hard knot in my throat would swell and I'd be crying in spite of myself. I took a deep breath and kept my mouth shut. Soda was awake by then, and although he looked stony-faced as if he hadn't heard a word the doctor had said, his eyes were bleak and stunned.
Serious reality has a hard time coming through to Soda, but when it does, it hits him hard. He looked like I felt when I had seen that black-haired Soche lying doubled up and still in the moonlight. Derry was rubbing the back of my head softly. "We'd better go home. We can't do anything here." In our Ford, I was suddenly overcome by sleepiness. I leaned back and closed my eyes, and we were home before I knew it. Soda was shaking me gently. "Hey, pony boy, wake up. You still got to get to the house." I said sleepily, and lay down on the seat. I couldn't have gotten up to save my life. I could hear Soda and Derry, but as if from a great distance. "Oh, come on, pony boy," Soda pleaded, shaking me a little harder. "We're sleepy, too." I guess Derry was tired of fooling around, because he picked me up and carried me in. "He's getting mighty big to be carried," Soda said. I wanted to tell him to shut up and let me sleep, but I only yawned. "He's sure lost a lot of weight," Derry said. I thought sleepily that I should at least pull off my shoes, but I didn't. I went to sleep the minute Derry tossed me on the bed. I'd forgotten how soft the bed really was. I was the first one up the next morning. Soda must have pulled my shoes and shirt off for me. I was still wearing my jeans. He must have been too sleepy to undress himself, though. He lay stretched out beside me, fully clothed. I wiggled out from under his arm and pulled the blanket up over him, then went to take a shower. Asleep, he looked a lot younger than going on 17. But I had noticed that Johnny looked younger when he was asleep, too, so I figured everyone did. Maybe people are younger when they're asleep. After my shower, I put on some clean clothes and spent 5 minutes or so hunting for a hint of beard on my face and mourning over my hair. That bum haircut made my ears stick out. Derry was still asleep when I went into the kitchen to fix breakfast. The first one up has to fix breakfast, and the other two do the dishes. That's the rule around our house, and usually it's Derry who fixes breakfast and me and Soda who are left with the dishes. I hunted through the icebox and found some eggs. We all like our eggs done differently. I like them hard. Derry likes them in a bacon and tomato sandwich, and Soda Pop eats his with grape jelly. All three of us like chocolate cake for breakfast. Mom had never allowed it with ham and eggs, but Derry let Soda and me talk him into it. We really didn't have to twist his arm. Derry loves chocolate cake as much as we do. Soda Pop always makes sure there's some in the icebox every night, and if there isn't, he cooks one up real quick. I like Derry's cakes better. Soda Pop always puts too much sugar in the icing. I don't see how he stands jelly and eggs and chocolate cake all at once, but he seems to like it. Derry drinks black coffee, and Soda Pop and I drink chocolate milk. We could have coffee if we wanted it, but we like chocolate milk. All three of us are crazy about chocolate stuff. Soda says if they ever make a chocolate cigarette, I'll have it made.
"Anybody home?"
A familiar voice called through the front screen, and Two-Bit and Steve came in. We always just stick our heads into each other's houses and holler, "Hey!" and walk in. Our front door is always unlocked in case one of the boys is hacked off at his parents' and needs a place to lay over and cool off. We could never tell who we'd find stretched out on the sofa in the morning. It was usually Steve, whose father told him about once a week to get out and never come back. It kind of bugs Steve, even if his old man does give him $5 or $6 the next day to make up for it. Or it might be Dally, who lived anywhere he could. Once, we even found Tim Shepard, leader of the Shepard gang, and far from his own turf, reading the morning paper in the armchair. He merely looked up, said, "Hi," and strolled out without staying for breakfast. Two-Bit's mother warned us about burglars, but Derry, flexing his muscles so that they bulged like oversized baseballs, drawled that he wasn't afraid of any burglars and that we really didn't have anything worth taking. He'd risk a robbery, he said, if it meant keeping one of the boys from blowing up and robbing a gas station or something. So the door was never locked. "In here," I yelled, forgetting that Darry and Soda Pop were still asleep. "Don't slam the door." They slammed the door, of course, and Two-Bit came running into the kitchen. He caught me by the upper arms and swung me around, ignoring the fact that I had two uncooked eggs in my hand. "Hey, Pony Boy," he cried gleefully. "Long time no see." You would have thought it had been 5 years instead of 5 days since I'd seen him last, but I didn't mind. I like old Two-Bit. He's a good buddy to have. He spun me into Steve, who gave me a playful slap on my bruised back and shoved me across the room. One of the eggs went flying. It landed on the clock, and I tightened my grip on the other one so that it crushed and ran all over my hand. "Now look what you did," I griped. "There went our breakfast. Can't you two wait till I set the eggs down before you go shoving me all over the country?" I really was a little mad, because I had just realized how long it had been since I'd eaten anything. The last thing I'd eaten was a hot fudge sundae at the Dairy Queen in Windricksville, and I was hungry. Two-Bit was walking in a slow circle around me, and I sighed because I knew what was coming.
"Man, Dig Baldy here."
He was staring at my head as he circled me.
"I wouldn't have believed it. I thought all the wild Indians in Oklahoma had been tamed. What little squaw's got that tough-looking mop of yours, Pony Boy?"
"Oh, lay off," I said. I wasn't feeling too good in the first place. Kind of like I was coming down with something. Two-Bit winked at Steve, and Steve said,
"Why, he had to get a haircut to get his picture in the paper. They'd never believe a little greasy-looking mug could be a hero. How do you like being a hero, Big Shot?"
"How do I like what?"
"Being a hero, you know."
He shoved the morning paper at me impatiently.
"Like a Big Shot, even."
I stared at the newspaper. On the front page of the second section was the headline, "Juvenile Delinquents Turn Heroes."
"What I like is the turn bit,"
Two-Bit said, cleaning the egg up off the floor.
"Y'all were heroes from the beginning. You just didn't turn all of a sudden."
I hardly heard him. I was reading the paper. That whole page was covered with stories about us. The fight, the murder, the church burning, the socias being drunk, everything. My picture was there with Darry and Soda Pop. The article told how Johnny and I had risked our lives saving those little kids. And there was a comment from one of the parents who said that they would all have burned to death if it hadn't been for us. It told the whole story of our fight with the socias, only they didn't say socias because most grown-ups don't know about the battles that go on between us. They had interviewed Cherry Valance, and she said Bob had been drunk and that the boys had been looking for a fight when they took her home. Bob had told her he'd fix us for picking up his girl. His buddy Randy Adderson, who had helped jump us, also said it was their fault and that we'd only fought back in self-defense, but they were charging Johnny with manslaughter. Then I discovered that I was supposed to appear at juvenile court for running away, and Johnny was too if he recovered. Not if, I thought again. Why do they keep saying if? For once, there weren't any charges against Dally, and I knew he'd be mad because the paper made him out a hero for saving Johnny and didn't say much about his police record, which he was kind of proud of. He'd kill those reporters if he got a hold of them. There was another column about just Darry and Soda and me, how Darry worked on two jobs at once and made good at both of them, and about his outstanding record at school. It mentioned Soda Pop dropping out of school so we could stay together, and that I made the honor roll at school all the time and might be a future track star. Oh, yeah, I forgot. I'm on the A-Squad track team, the youngest one. I'm a good runner. Then it said we shouldn't be separated after we had worked so hard to stay together. The meaning of that last line finally hit me. You mean, I swallowed hard, that they're thinking about putting me and Soda in a boys' home or something? Steve was carefully combing back his hair in complicated swirls.
Something like that.
I said.
sat down in a daze. We couldn't get hauled off now. Not after me and Darry had finally got through to each other, and now that the big rumble was coming up, and we would settle this Soch greaser thing once and for all. Not now, when Johnny needed us and Dally was still in the hospital and wouldn't be out for the rumble. No, I said out loud, and Two-Bit, who was scraping the egg off the clock, turned to stare at me.
No what?
No, they ain't gonna put us in a boys' home.
Don't worry about it, Steve said, cocksure that he and Soda Pop could handle anything that came up. They don't do things like that to heroes. Where are Soda and Superman?
That was as far as he got, because Darry, shaved and dressed, came in behind Steve and lifted him up off the floor, then dropped him. We all called Darry Superman or Muscles at one time or another, but one time Steve made the mistake of referring to him as all brawn and no brain, and Darry almost shattered Steve's jaw. Steve didn't call him that again, but Darry never forgave him. Darry has never really gotten over not going to college. That was the only time I've ever seen Soda mad at Steve, although Soda attaches no importance to education. School board and no action. Soda came running in.
Where's the blue shirt I washed yesterday?
He took a swig of chocolate milk out of the container.
Hate to tell you, buddy, Steve said, still flat on the floor. But you have to wear clothes to work. There's a law or something.
Oh, yeah, Soda said. Where are those wheat jeans, too?
I ironed. They're in my closet, Darry said. Hurry up, you're going to be late.
Soda ran back, muttering, I'm hurrying. Steve followed him, and in a second there was the general racket of a pillow fight. I absent-mindedly watched Darry as he searched the icebox for chocolate cake. Darry, I said suddenly, did you know about the juvenile court? Without turning to look at me, he said evenly,
yeah, the cops told me last night.
I knew then that he realized we might get separated. I didn't want to worry him any more, but I said, I had one of those dreams last night, the one I can't ever remember. Darry spun around to face me, genuine fear on his face.
What?
I had a nightmare the night of Mom and Dad's funeral. I'd had nightmares and wild dreams every once in a while when I was little, but nothing like this one. I woke up screaming bloody murder, and I never could remember what it was that had scared me. It scared Soda Pop and Darry almost as bad as it scared me. For night after night, for weeks on end, I would dream this dream and wake up in a cold sweater screaming. And I never could remember exactly what happened in it. Soda began sleeping with me, and it stopped recurring so often, but it happened often enough for Darry to take me to a doctor. The doctor said I had too much imagination. He had a simple cure, too. Study harder, read more, draw more, and play football more. After a hard game of football and 4 or 5 hours of reading, I was too exhausted mentally and physically to dream anything. But Darry never got over it, and every once in a while he would ask me if I ever dreamed any more.
Was it very bad?
Two-Bit questioned. He knew the whole story, and never having dreamed about anything but blondes, he was interested.
No,
I lied. I had awakened in a cold sweat and shivering, but Soda was dead to the world. I had just wiggled closer to him and stayed awake for a couple of hours, trembling under his arm. That dream always scared the heck out of me. Darry started to say something, but before he could begin, Soda Pop and Steve came in.
You know what?
Soda Pop said to no one in particular.
When we stomp the Soches good, me and Stevie here are going to throw a big party and everybody can get stoned. Then we'll go chase the Soches clear to Mexico.
Where are you going to get the dough, little man?
Darry had found the cake and was handing out pieces.
I'll think of something, Soda Pop assured him between bites.
You going to take Sandy to the party? I asked, just to be saying something. Instant silence. I looked around.
What's the deal?
Soda Pop was staring at his feet, but his ears were reddening.
No.
She went to live with her grandmother in Florida.
How come?
Look, Steve said, surprisingly angry. Does he have to draw you a picture? It was either that or get married, and her parents almost hit the roof at the idea of her marrying a 16-year-old kid.
17, Soda said softly. I'll be 17 in a couple of weeks.
Oh, I said, embarrassed. Soda was no innocent. I had been in on bull sessions, and his bragging was as loud as anyone's. But never about Sandy. Not ever about Sandy. I remembered how her blue eyes had glowed when she looked at him, and I was sorry for her. There was a heavy silence. Then Derry said,
"We'd better get on to work, Pepsi-Cola."
Derry rarely called Soda by Dad's pet nickname for him, but he did so then because he knew how miserable Soda Pop was about Sandy.
"I hate to leave you here by yourself, Pony Boy," Derry said slowly. "Maybe I ought to take the day off."
"I've stayed by my lonesome before. You can't afford a day off."
"Yeah, but you just got back, and I really ought to stay."
"I'll babysit him,"
Two-Bit said, ducking as I took a swing at him.
"I haven't got anything better to do."
"Why don't you get a job?" Steve said. "Ever consider working for a living?"
"Work?"
Two-Bit was aghast.
"And ruin my rep? I wouldn't be babysitting the kid here if I knew of some good day nursery open on Saturdays."
I pulled his chair over backward and jumped on him, but he had me down in a second. I was kind of short on wind. I've got to cut out smoking or I won't make track next year.
"Holler, Uncle."
"Nope," I said, struggling, but I didn't have my usual strength. Derry was pulling on his jacket.
"You two do up the dishes. You can go to the movies if you want to before you go see Dally and Johnny."
He paused for a second, watching Two-Bit squash the heck out of me.
"Two-Bit, lay off. He ain't looking so good. Pony Boy, you take a couple of aspirins and go easy. You smoke more than a pack today and I'll skin you, understood?"
"Yeah," I said, getting to my feet. "You carry more than one bundle of roofing at a time today, and me and Soda'll skin you. Understood?" He grinned one of his rare grins.
"Yeah. See y'all this afternoon."
"Bye," I said. I heard our Fords and thought, "Soda's driving," and they left.
"Anyway, I was walking around downtown and started to take this shortcut through an alley."
Two-Bit was telling me about one of his many exploits while we did the dishes. While I did the dishes. He was sitting on the cabinet sharpening that black-handled switchblade he was so proud of.
"And I ran into three guys. I says, 'Howdy.' And they just look at each other. Then one says, 'We would jump you, but since you're as slick as us, we figure you don't have nothing worth taking.' I says, 'Buddy, that's the truth,' and went right on. Moral, what's the safest thing to be when one is met by a gang of social outcasts in an alley?"
"A judo expert?" I suggested.
"No, another social outcast,"
Two-Bit yelped, and nearly fell off the cabinet from laughing so hard. I had to grin, too. He saw things straight and made them into something funny. "We're going to clean up the house," I said. "The reporters or police or somebody might come by, and anyway, it's time for those guys from the state to come by and check up on us."
"This house ain't messy. You ought to see my house."
"I have. And if you had the sense of a billy goat, you'd try to help around your place instead of bumming around."
"Shoot, kid. If I ever did that, my mom would die of shock."